Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Rick English, the founder of Up Advisors, where he partners with business owners to grow with clarity and lead with freedom. A former CEO, COO, and CFO, Rick brings decades of real-world experience, fearless honesty, and sharp strategy to every engagement. With an MBA, over 440 clients served, and deep roots across industries, he's the business partner you wish you had without giving up equity. Rick's been featured on top shows like the Rich Sommers podcast and the Entrepreneur Show. When he's not coaching leaders, he's off-roading Idaho trails or cheering on sprint cars with his dog, Elsie. I've asked him to join us here today to share his insights into a successful business in the modern world. So Rick, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing, man?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. We had some good conversation pre this. I'm going to have to get a rope and some shovels after this call. But before we get into any of that, how did you even get into what you're doing now? Is this something your parents did? Are you following in your parents' footsteps? And is this a family trade or what?
No. My dad was a painter. My mom was a homemaker. There was no consulting there, really. No, I loved watching this show, The Prophet, with Marcus Lemonis, who's actually the owner of Camping World, who's been in the news a little bit lately for the flag situation. I don't know if you follow that or not, but
no.
Down in North Carolina, I think it is.
One
of his stores he's had to shut down because he's fighting with the city over a flag. But he was on a show on CNBC called The Prophet. And essentially people would write in to ask for his help and investment in the business when their business was struggling. And so he would go meet with them and go through the whole show, and he would meet with them and get to know their business. And then he would look at people, process, and product. Those were his three things. And so he would go in and figure out whether or not he could be helpful, whether or not it was something he was willing to invest time in and invest money in. And if he was willing to invest the money, he'd write a check. He'd actually write the check out right there on TV, hand it to him, and shake hands. And he was 100% in charge. That was the rule. No matter what, he was 100% in charge. And so it was just, I watched it year over year. And I always had a business mind. You gave my bio. So I decided, like, my wife wanted to get out of California. And I'm originally from Seattle, but we had moved to California, spent about 9 years there. She wanted out. And I'm like, if I'm going to go do something, I'm going to get out of the insurance brokerage space and I'm going to start my own business. And I'm going to do consulting. And I'm going to focus on people, process, product, profit, and customer experience. And that's where my five buckets of business came from. And then I just went out and started meeting people and growing the business and growing my process. And that's the rest is history. So
I love it. So It was just, you watched the show, you got inspired, you decided to put out a shingle, the heavens opened. There were, what are those called? The cherubs, not the cherubs, the little, whatever, the Cupid thing. Angels and money fell from the sky, and it's been sunshine and rainbows. Is that?
It was a lot of work. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of networking. I really built the business through networking. I'm here in the Boise area, and it just happens to be an area where a lot gets done through your network. And so I have been to countless networking events and met people and was able to articulate what it is that I do and who I want to help. And through that process, got connections and helped people. And when you help people, it turns out they like to tell people who they run into that need help that you're good at helping people. And so it's more of that. Today, actually, every quarter I do something called a referral appreciation lunch. So I have referral sort clients in all different parts of the country. So I can't always bring those people into a lunch, but I invite people, whoever has given me any client revenue that I got during a given quarter, whoever that came from, even if it was 3 years ago that I started, that I was introduced to them, I invite them to a lunch. So I had 20 people invited to a lunch. We had, I think, 10, half of them show up today. Some couldn't make it. Some of those are clients. Some of those are just network referral sources. And I could have probably invited another 10 or 15 from other parts of the country where obviously we can get them here for lunch. But that network effect and all that work and the customers referring, and even sitting at the table today, one of my customers is like, hey, have you met this guy? I think you guys should talk. And so that's how it's grown.
I love that. So now I'm curious, because if someone's starting out or struggling with networking, how do you do that? Because it's not as easily measured perhaps as the direct mail campaign or paid ads. So can you talk through, what would you recommend to someone starting out or struggling? Okay, I think that's how I need to grow. Some people that I don't want to be salesy. I want to prefer to grow through referrals.
Yeah, I think first it starts with just getting clear on what it is that you do and who you want to serve, because people will ask you, what do you do? That's the number one thing in networking. You meet somebody, I say, hey, good to meet you. What do you do? And if you can't articulate that very clearly right out of the gate, you're not going to make this sort of connection that gives that person confidence. So you got to know be able to clearly articulate what you do, and then also who you want to serve. Once you do that, then it's really finding those places. So if you know who you want to serve, where are you going to connect with those people? For some people, that's BNI. I don't know if you've heard of BNI, but there are a lot of people that have a lot of success in BNI. I visited some BNIs, but BNI wasn't the best place for me. It's a big commitment, and I didn't want to make this sort of time commitment. But there's a lot of other networking groups, micro networking groups. And so I found groups. I started with the Chamber of Commerce. Actually, and from there, I got introduced to different groups. And as you meet more and more people, you'll find that Bob over here has set up a networking group with contractors, or Joe over here has set up a networking group with just a diverse group of people. So you go there and you figure out who people are. One of the things I like to do is ask the organizer, you know, all these people, you know, here's who I want to meet. Who should I talk to in the room? So you can't meet 50 people in an hour or two, an hour and a half meeting, but if you ask them who, you know, hey, I'm looking to meet insurance brokers, I'm looking to meet financial advisors, I'm looking to meet attorneys or whatever that is, then they can point you to those people. You need to go meet Tom. He's a business attorney. You guys would be a great connection. So doing that to make your networking more efficient. The last thing I would say is you have to be courageous. You have to be willing. One, you got to tell yourself that you're in sales. Because if you're a small business owner and you don't have somebody selling for you, or a really great sales engine that's generating all the business that you need, you're in sales. And so you got to be willing to get out and communicate what you do and meet people. Be comfortable walking up and saying, hi, my name is Rick. I don't think I've met you yet. And if it's you, it's like, hey, Rick, good to meet you. What do you do? And now you're in that conversation. But if you're going to walk in the room and stand in the corner, it's not going to work. Yeah.
That's a really powerful tip. I had a talk with a friend today. Sorry, yesterday, saying something similar. He was talking about most business owners, they just want to say, oh, I'll help anybody. But if you're going to help anybody, that's like going hunting, walking in the woods and just shooting at anything, everything versus going, I'm looking for this type of deer. I know that the deer typically go to this little pond, and I know that they're typically most active around sunrise. And so if I go out 30 minutes early and I get set up, that I know I can find, and it's just way, way different. He also used a fishing analogy that I thought was really good, that you have to know whether it's high tide or low tide or middle of the day that those fish are most active. And then what part of the pond are they most active in, right? Mm-hmm. Is it better to go fishing with a full moon? What kind of a lure do you need? What does it need to look like? And if you go out at the right time of day to the right spot with the right baits, you can catch yourself a big fish. But if you're just throwing it in and just hoping, hope isn't a strategy. So I think what you articulate is really good. At the beginning, it's know what you do and who you want to help and where you can find those people, and then figure out where they gather, go. And then that was a great tip to talk to the organizer first to give you some sort of direction on where to go. And now you got to go meet the person, and what, you just show up and, hi, my name is, and I want to sell you something. Is that how you go about it?
No, my whole deal is I took the approach that I network with generosity. And the idea is I'm going to go meet that person and I'm going to figure out how I can help them, who I can connect them to. If you're just getting started, it may be a little bit more difficult, but part of it requires that you get a business card from everybody. You actually connect with those people afterwards and you remember who they are. So when you go meet an attorney and they tell you they're looking to meet CPAs, hey, do you know Joe? Have you met Joe yet? Oh, no, I haven't met Joe. Let me introduce you to Joe. So I actually make sure everybody I meet, my assistant puts the information in my phone. So when I meet somebody, I say, well, do you know Joe? No, I don't know Joe. Here, let me send you Joe's contact information. Reach out to him and tell him that Rick told you to give him a call. Or I'll make if it makes sense to make a text introduction, I'll make a text introduction. But you do it right there. But you can't do it if the business card's sitting on your desk under a pile of 50 of them. But I was always of the mindset of, And even when you do one-on-ones after you do networking, you go to get to know somebody a little bit better. I dig in to get to know them. And we spend maybe the last 5, 10 minutes, unless they were super curious, just telling them what I did. But it's leading with generosity that will serve you well.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, you give before you get. That's a great, that's
Yep.
super powerful.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about, so now let's talk about how you got into, you went in, got into consulting, and what? It was just sunshine and rainbows. You said no, you had to start with networking. Was that it? Was it a tough slog in the beginning? Did your
It helped. So before, about 6 months before I launched my business, I had helped the nephew of the founder of the company that I was the CEO of. And he had asked me, he's got some HR issues or whatever. Can you talk to him? So I ended up helping him out, and obviously no charge. And he reached out to me a week before I launched and said, hey, are you, and I told him I was going to be doing consulting. And he's like, are you still doing that consulting thing? And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm launching next week. And he's, let's talk. So he ended up becoming my first customer. So it was perfect because I was able to, I had all these ideas on how I was going to do it. And it's obviously evolved over the last 3.5 years, but I was able to test out a bunch of things. And then I actually got a referral from that person's cousin, actually, who was my other business partner in California. The son of the founder referred me his half sister who lived in Colorado. So my first, I'm here in Idaho. My first client's in Arizona. My second client's in Colorado. I'm like, this is pretty cool. And I thought, I haven't gotten any clients yet in Idaho, but that was, quite frankly, that was before I'd even started networking both of those clients. And so that was a nice way to get into it and to really start to refine what the offer was going to be and how I was going to serve customers. I was advised by somebody who had done the same thing many years before. If you're going to do it, don't try and side hustle it. Now that I think you, after this time of doing it, I think you could side hustle it a bit, but for where I was at and where this guy had been, he's like, just go all in because you do need to invest the time to
Well,
network and.
I want to emphasize that because that was some great advice that I got as well. I'm talking to someone that was a business owner and I was looking at him, he's like, if you're going to do it, you have to put in full-time hours. If you treat your business like a hobby, it'll pay you like a hobby. If you treat it like a business, it'll pay you like a business. And it's almost other advice I got prior to launching businesses, my own business, when I was just looking for a job. And they said, if you are looking for full-time work and you put full-time hours in finding a job, you'll find one. And so it's the same in a lot of ways. A business is a never-ending job hunt because if ideally you want to have a waiting list, right? And there's no business. Apple isn't, oh, we sold enough iPhones, we're gonna chill. Like it's nonstop hunting for new clients. So that's a great tip. I'm glad you said that. That's a really good tip. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see clients and others, entrepreneurs making?
One of the biggest things that I see is just not knowing their numbers and not knowing their financial numbers, but also other key data points. So some people call them OKRs, some people call them KPIs, key performance indicators. You can call them whatever you want. I actually refer to it as a success scoreboard. What are those things that we need to be measuring in the business that tell us that we're winning? Because at the end of the day, most business owners that I work with, they're trying to win. And what winning looks like may look a little bit different to each person. I think the most common thing I hear is they want to get to the point where the business runs itself. If you're not actually tracking your numbers, those key data points, it's hard to know if you're winning. So some people want to manage by bank account. One of my first clients delayed working with me for about 4 months, and he was managing by bank account, and he ended up going bankrupt. We almost saved the business, but it was so far gone by the time I got to him that we couldn't save it. But the problem he had was he's paying $800 a month for a bookkeeper to do his bookkeeping and to make sure his taxes got paid. He was running a multi-state operation, but he didn't know his numbers. I could not get a good P&L out of him. And we finally got to the point where we had that, but that same guy actually, he was making decisions without doing appropriate analysis. He went and he decided he took on a contract and he was going to spend X thousands of dollars every month to fulfill the contract, but he didn't know if he was going to be profitable or not. So we sat down one day on a call, we did the math. And I'm like, you're losing money on every trip. He was in the transportation space. You're losing money on every trip because I thought I was going to make money.
Yeah.
I said, well, you didn't do the math, right? So if you don't know your numbers, then you're going to get yourself in a bad spot. You don't pay attention to your cash flow. You don't pay attention to your margins. If it costs you 85 cents to deliver your services, every 85 cents of every dollar to deliver your services, that leaves you 15 cents to cover all of your expenses, the operating expenses of the business, and give yourself a profit. You
Right.
don't know that. You're just going to operate and you're like, oh, you're going to think you're going to make it up in volume or something like that.
That's a really powerful one. Well, what do you recommend to someone that is struggling with? Obviously they can come and talk to you and hire you, but for like you mentioned, because I've actually come into that before. I had a hell of a time prior because bookkeeping is great, but that's past, like that's already gone. Like, what about the projections? What about what today? What about today and the projections? Are we trending up? Are we trending down? So what do you recommend to people? Because that can be a tough thing to manage. Do you need to have a dedicated person? That's what they do, or
If you can afford someone to be your CFO who's doing your tracking, that's fantastic. But most smaller business owners can't afford that. You can get fractional support. What I find, though, I have a plumbing contractor that I've been working with for the last year and a half. And actually, the reason he engaged me is I don't know my numbers.
right.
And so we ended up working together, and his margins were skinny. And so there's a lot of reasons why your margins are skinny. But he had an assistant, like an office manager type person, and then he had an estimator. So we basically utilized those people, and now we've got a VA that we put in and that. But we have the estimator has ownership of certain numbers that he has to produce. The VA has ownership of certain numbers that he has to produce, and then the owner has certain numbers that he's responsible because he's responsible for certain aspects of the business, and those all get populated on their success scoreboard every week, and they review the numbers every week. As far as looking forward, one of the things that's super important is if you're in an industry, any industry where you're issuing proposals or you're doing bids or whatever it is that you're doing, you need to track how many bids did we issue, how many bids did we win, what's our close ratio. The bids issued and bids won, those are leading indicators in a business. I don't know if you're familiar with the conference board, but the conference board produces those different numbers. So like in construction or even for the economy, new housing starts is a leading indicator. And for business, new proposals is and new leads are leading indicators. If your leads aren't good and you're not issuing any proposals, unless you have really strong retention, you're going to have trouble ahead. So just tracking some of that historical stuff, you do want to know, are we hitting our revenue target? Are we hitting our profit targets? Are we meeting the cash flow targets that we have? But yeah, those leading indicators are super important. Some of that could be like we talked about networking or advertising. How much did you invest in marketing? And then what are you getting as far as a return on ad spend, or what is your customer acquisition cost? Some of those different things are
Yeah,
all
I love
super.
that. I love that. I love that. And I think that granular level you're talking about is really important because I have a buddy of mine. He built a seven-figure online business and he hired this agency and was just like, hey, this is what I'm paying per lead. I want more leads for less. And they got him more leads for less, but his lead to buy cycle was something like 30 to 45 days. And it took him almost 80 days to realize that the leads were garbage and that he was going bankrupt real fast because none of the leads were buying. They were all almost half of them were junk name, like they were just bad leads. And the company was doing what they were doing, but they were bidding so low in the paid advertising that the traffic they were getting, it wasn't the same quality click, right? Type thing. But it took them. And so it takes 80 days to notice the problem. Now you got to pivot, set up, and now you got to get new blood in the system and wait 45 days for that turnaround. And not only that, another key thing that I think is really important is making sure you're tracking, like you mentioned, how many won. You didn't say how many lost, you said how many won. So I worked with a client, we had a webinar funnel that we were using. We almost did $3 million with back-end sales with this webinar funnel, and we were split testing the registration page. And we did a split test on one of the registration pages, and the COO at the time wanted to declare one as the winner because we were getting 20% more leads. But I had to be like, no, we're getting 20% more leads, but we're getting half the sales, not 50% less, but we're getting half the sales. And the difference was a drop down that allowed personalization. Like it was like name, email, and a drop down for like their number one goal. And that got us 20% less leads than the one without the drop down. But we got 50% the less. So anyways, so tracking all this, two money in the bank is mission critical.
Yeah, absolutely.
So would you say that what are the key metrics then? So you're talking about obviously a P&L. You talk about leading indicators, like you mentioned, new leads, quote sent versus how many won. What about what would you consider? And maybe you've already spoken to this kind of top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom of funnel. I don't know if that's the right vernacular, but
I think top of funnel is certainly the lead piece. How many leads are we getting? And you may measure quality leads. If your intake form or your landing page or whatever the questions you're asking, if that's dialed and it's not too complicated that people are just not going to fill it out, is getting you the information, then you can measure a quality lead versus a low quality lead. So I think that's definitely top of funnel is just that quality lead. And then it's if are you trying to get how many people are attending your webinar? That's the middle of your funnel. You know, or if you're doing sales calls, how many sales calls are you getting from your leads, tracking that? And then we get to the bottom of the funnel. We're talking about closing and the closing ratio. And what does that look like? How many opportunities are you going to get? Are you getting to close? And then how many closings are you getting? And then also I think that return on ad spend is a measure at the bottom of your funnel as well. Mm-hmm. If you're using ads to feed that or even networking, it could be return on time in that case, because it's not like it's free to go network.
Yeah.
You actually have to invest. I went to this breakfast this morning, 2 hours. It was a half hour or 15 minutes each direction. So that's 2.5 hours of my time. What does that cost?
Yep.
You might be measuring return on time.
So what are some of the most important sort of skills? We talked about the mistakes that people are making, and a big one is just not measuring. And that's really, was it the saying, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And if you can't manage it, you can't fix or grow it. Right.
Yeah.
And so you got to measure it first. But what are some of the specific skills that you think are really important?
Yeah. One is just being able to read those numbers. The other is hiring. Cause one of the other issues I see, in fact, I was just on a call right before this with a client in the Seattle area. And we were talking about, it was funny because he's got a guy and he's operating at 50%. He's doing about 50% of the work that he should be doing. He describes it as operating at 50%.
Right.
And I said, well, how long are you good with him operating at 50%? And he's probably going to take another 6 months. I'm like, are you good with another 6 months? And I think he's okay with it because it's his busy season and it's better than having to make a transition. But the problem is with this, in this situation, is he had 10 people over the last 5 years before this guy, and this guy's the best of the 11. Right. And I said, your problem is you're measuring him against a bunch of people who were underperformers and instead of thinking he wants to get out. His goal is to be out of the business. I talk about business freedom, mastery, that sort of thing. His goal is to build the business so he can be free because he has other things that he wants to be able to do. And I said, you're not getting out. You're not getting out with this guy. So we got to go find A player, maybe a B plus player who has the opportunity to be an A player, but definitely be looking for the A player, A plus player to fill this spot. And he goes, when do you think I should look? And so we're not just going to look, we're going to have a different process. We have a different process. We're going to interview, we're going to use assessment tools that give us deeper insights into this person. And we're going to go find the right person. We're not going to be satisfied with, he's basically a C minus, this guy. It says a lot about the people that he had before. But like that mindset has to shift, and you have to get good at hiring the right people and invest the time and use the tools.
Yeah, that's super mission critical. Are there certain habits, whether they're daily or weekly, that you think or that the most successful people have?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think there are certainly some people are like very routine. They get up in the morning, they work out in the morning. I don't spend a lot of time on that sort of stuff. That I feel like some of that's a bit more of a life coaching element, but I do encourage people to have a routine in business. And to the other, one of the key habits is delegating to elevate. So always be looking to delegate so that you can elevate yourself in your business to do what you do best. The other thing that goes along with that, it's a habit I talk to all my clients about. It's one of the first things we talk about after a deep dive is to recognize that your time has more value than your probably what you're paying yourself.
Oh, yeah.
So minimum is $150 an hour. Some of my clients say their time is worth $5,000 an hour. If that's the case, then one of the key habits is to always be looking out for situations where you are doing work that is not commensurate with your value.
Right.
Sometimes as business owners, we got to do that.
Yep.
But if that's the norm, it's going to be a problem
Yep.
because if your time is worth $250 an hour and you spend a bunch of time coding transactions and
Yes.
quick,
Yes.
it's $20 an hour time.
If you want to be making $250 an hour, stop doing $10 an hour work.
Yeah, exactly. There's a huge opportunity cost. And so that's one of the big habits that I see people break or get sucked into if they have a bad habit of doing that. But developing a habit of just really making sure that you're spending as much time as possible doing that high value work, the work that's going to get you to be free in your business.
I love that. You reminded me, one of my mentors, Kim McCarthy, he had a quote where he'd say, and I told him, I interviewed him maybe 6 months ago, and I told him I updated it and he agreed with it. But his quote was, delegate as much as you can so you're calling the shots, analyzing the stats, and copywriting. And he's like an early internet marketer. And I said, I changed it to delegate as much as you can so you're calling the shots, analyzing the stats, and communicating with staff, with customers, with vendors, because that's, I think, what you need to be doing. You need to be calling the shots and communicating with. Would you agree with that? Would you edit it in any way,
Absolutely.
shape, or form?
I think that's pretty on point. It's the only thing I would add to it would be that you want to get to the point where you're calling the shots, but you're also doing the work. If you're going to work in the business, you're doing the work that really gives you joy and fulfillment. So that sounds a little fluffy, but it's true. If you think about it, do you want to spend your time doing things, something you might be good at it, but you might not get joy and fulfillment from it. And so if you really are delegating effectively, you're going to get to the point where you're doing the work in the business that you enjoy and that you're good at.
And
So,
now, what are you paying attention to? We're going through so much geopolitically. There's a lot of disruption happening because of technology and AI. What do you see in your crystal ball over the next five, 10 years?
that's an interesting question. I've been talking about that a lot lately with AI and just AI is moving at a super fast pace. There's still weaknesses certainly in it, but 2 weeks ago, there's an engineering firm I work with here in town, and I asked them to create a job description for a PE, a professional engineer that they needed to hire. And so they did it. They had a couple of weeks to get it done. And I went into Claude AI and I a couple of days before the meeting and gave it a prompt to create a job description for me. And then that 5 minutes before the meeting, I did it again because I had another idea I wanted to add to it. And so they came up with this job description. It was okay. It was just okay. Like I wouldn't have published it. It needed some work. And I said, hey, what do you guys think of this one? And I just emailed it to all of them. Actually, no, I shared it on the screen and just asked them to look at it. They're like, holy crap, that is amazing. That looks fantastic. I said, there's a few things in here that we need to change. I said, what do you think? And they're like, that's awesome. Because I said, here's mine. I didn't tell them I did it in AI. I said, yeah, I did that. That's 30, that took all of about 15 seconds in AI. And that's the tip of the iceberg. I think that unfettered. And if AI has sufficient power, which is the biggest issue that AI has, is it consumes so much more power than a typical Google search, the AI prompts. If it goes unfettered, I think there's going to be massive job destruction that isn't going to be replaced. I would love to have the thought process that it's going to be a lot different than that, but I think that the technology has the potential to eliminate so many jobs that have never been eliminated by technology in the past. Attorneys, coaches and consultants and accountants and bookkeepers. If like with agentic AI, I don't know how familiar you are with that, but agentic AI is coming and just the iterations that and how quickly it can learn, as long as the information is available and then it gets even better at creating things out of nothing, yeah, I think we're going to see a big change. I don't know what that looks like exactly. And I don't know how it's going to go. But what I'm teaching my clients is it's here. So we can worry about what's going to happen in the future. We can't control the future. So let's focus on now and let's make sure you're leveraging this to maximize your profits in your business, maximize the ability for you to achieve your vision. And you know what? we're not stopping AI. So let's embrace it, utilize it,
There's no putting the
and
genie back in the bottle on this one.
no, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I like to set with my clients, I like to set annual objectives and then break it down into 90 days and then have the success scoreboard, which we're tracking weekly, monthly. With that in mind, it's how are we incorporating this into our marketing, or how we incorporate it into building our processes. I work with businesses across a lot of different sectors. I was in a law firm on Monday with a client. I don't do a ton of in-person meetings, but I was in their office and we were talking about this for the processes and procedures. You could go hire somebody to go build out your process and procedures, but shoot, you could through a series of prompts, you can get pretty close and just do a little modification and next thing you've got some pretty strong policies and procedures centered around how to operate a law office.
It's an interesting time to be alive. I think it's one of the most competitive times in human history. I went to this conference here in the Philippines. It was like CEO Asia. And I got to meet like the president of Philippine Airlines. I actually had him on the podcast shortly after, but afterwards I was at the Marriott Hotel in Manila and I saw there was a AI conference around the corner. This is when GPT first came out. And I crashed the vendor alley. I didn't do any of the sessions. I didn't eat the food. That wouldn't have been, but I didn't. I figured the vendors wouldn't care if they had another person come to the booth. I just wanted to see who's selling what at an AI summit. And Google had a booth there. All these banks had booths there. What struck me was it's like somebody hit reset because every single booth was talking about their product and then talking about what they're going to launch next with AI. And I realized that their old product is paying the bills for them now, but their future depends on the new thing they have to build with AI. And that's leveled the playing field that any moat that existed, they might have an advantage because they've already got a team of developers. Sure. But they're starting over. And so, in some ways, it's really empowering that way. But I also, it's my part, you didn't ask my opinion, but it's my podcast. I think that we've been talking about replacing humans forever. When tractors came out, we said we wouldn't need farmers. When calculators came out, we don't need bookkeepers and mathematicians. When spreadsheets came out, we're not going to need an apartment, accounting department. QuickBooks has come out. Accounting is dead. We have QuickBooks. And so we've been saying this forever. And if you go and Google the spark of life, you can actually see the moment of conception when the sperm and the egg meet. They see these fertility clinics around the world that when the sperm and the egg meet, there's a literal flash of light. And I didn't know that blew my mind when I saw that. And if the science, they say, the scientists say, and I grew up in a house of hard science, physics, geology, and applied physics. But the scientists say it's a release of zinc. Okay, you show me releasing zinc that creates sentient life. For me, that is the spark of life. That's so, to me, it's like you have a spark inside of you. I have a spark inside of me. We have a spark inside of all of us. And until we figure that out, I don't think that AI is its own sentient thing. I think it's just a really smart tool. These LLMs, like you talk about, they're statistical predictions. If I say this sentence, what do you predict the answer will be? The end of the sentence is. And you feed it billions of conversations and it's iterations on that, which makes it an incredibly powerful tool. And as you say, as it grows and learns exponentially, incredibly powerful. But I don't know, unless the bus is going to drive itself and come up with its own reason to go to its own destination, I just don't see us as letting go of the steering wheel. And I think there's, like you say, there's going to be a lot of upset. I think there's going to be a lot. It's when spreadsheets came out, accountants that were top performers became more productive, and the accountants that would take all day to go 2 + 2 = 4, they lost their ability to hide in a corner and they have to get retrained, upskilled, and find something new.
I think it's going to be really interesting. I have my thoughts, but I don't have a crystal ball.
We'll see what happens. My biggest concern is the drone wars, because I don't know if people have seen, there's been these drone shows instead of firework shows. And that's great and really entertaining, but it's also a display of military might. They did one here nearby, and I think they had something like 10,000 drones in the air. And if you put a piece of remote controlled C4 on each one of those and added facial recognition, what are you going to do? At this point, what are you gonna do? And if you have a seek and destroy AI, I mean,
No,
that's
you're right.
it's going to be an exciting and interesting future, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
So, what do you think are some of the best hedges against replacement by AI in the future?
I think differentiation, that's actually not a new thing. If you create an experience, a great experience for customers that's unique, I think that's a huge thing. And really being on top of your game and differentiated in the services that you provide, becoming so invaluable. You mentioned in the introduction that I come alongside business owners. I don't take equity. That's one of the core things that I say in all of my networking and when I meet people is because what I find is a lot of people are looking for a business partner. When I get on calls, I have an agenda for every call, but I don't necessarily know what's going on in that business that particular week. I might be talking to a guy about his marriage and how he wants out of it, which has happened. Or I might be talking to somebody and find out that two of their employees left, quit unexpectedly, and went to a competitor. They know that when they get on the call, when they jump on the call and they start asking me questions, they're getting somebody who, one, already knows their business. They care about it is almost as much as them. I don't know, I can care as much as them, but I do with my clients. They've developed a relationship with me where they know that I'm going to shoot straight with them. And if I don't know the answer, I'm going to tell them, which isn't very often, but a lot, because there's times I don't, but most of the time I can give them an answer and give them direction. And that's different. That's different. And so being able to differentiate yourself, I think, is in some industries, it's harder, but some nowadays with service and some industries, it's not that hard to differentiate.
No, yeah. There are a lot of
You
people.
know, I think that's a big thing, that differentiation. And I also think innovation is just not just like I'm talking about AI. I'm talking about, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? It's just really understanding and coming, bringing new ideas to the table on a regular basis that can help them help improve their business, achieve their goals, those sort of things. Whatever it is that you deliver, it could be a homeowner that you're serving somehow. It could be an attorney who is trying to figure out ways to re resolve disputes in a more efficient manner, whatever it might be, effective manner to reduce costs. I think, and then just being valuable for whatever the price is that you're charging.
Yeah, I love that. I think I wrote down what you'd said from, I wrote down focus on customer experience, differentiation, and focusing on excellence. And I think that's it. If you don't become entrapped in how it's always been and focus on producing an excellent result and an excellent experience, and differentiation is twofold. It's one, it's making yourself different, but it's also personalizing the business to really be for that type of person. I think that's really powerful. Rick, this has been such a great interview. I've got a couple of pages of notes here. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm just all about helping business owners be successful and grow and make their whatever their vision is for their business a reality. Sometimes stretching that vision if it's not as big as it should be based upon what I've learned about them, but also just also really understanding where they are. And I think when I think of any business owners, if you're serving customers, meeting them where they are and not trying to get them somewhere they don't want to go or get them something they don't really need is important. So it's all for me about helping the customer get what they want. In this case, my customers happen to be business owners. But I think that piece is just super important. And I don't lock people up into long-term contracts for the most part. I have an offer where it's 6 months, but otherwise it's custom work. And if you're not getting value, you should stop working with me. And so I think that's the way it should be for in most situations. Why are we trying to lock people up? If they're getting value or they're getting what they want, then you should be, they'll keep working with you.
I love that. I love that. Rick, if people want to connect, if they have some questions, if they want to find out more, if they want to get in touch, what are some of the best ways for them to reach out?
Yeah, they can go to my website, obviously. It's myupadvisors.com. They could email me at renglish@myupadvisors.com. They can call me. I don't mind giving out my phone number on podcasts. It's 208-565-6099. You can text me, you can call me, whatever works.
Yeah, so if you enjoyed this, you might want to listen to it more than once to make sure you got all the nuggets. And if you want to reach out to Rick, you can call for the country code 208-565-6099. You can send him an email at renglish, ENGLISH, at myupadvisors.com. That's plural, MYUPADVISORS.com. Rick, thank you so much for your time today, knowing you have your own direct reports, your own family, take care of your own clients. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience tonight so we can all do a little bit better.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.